Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Stu Weber at StuWeb.com, and it is Friday, January the 29th, 2021. Second show of the day. And I have the honor to have Professor Joe on and Professor Paul on. We're missing Professor James Fetzer, but it will be doing a show with him soon. And that was the intent for this time, so I decided to go ahead and change and with these two gentlemen because they were going to be part of the show. Now, you mentioned, Paul, you had a question a moment ago with Joe about the book of Daniel, but I want you to set it up first, if you would. I welcome both of you to the program.
All right. I apologize if my sound isn't its usual clear signal, but what I asked Joel about is the book of Daniel, and the book of Daniel is really significant because mainstream prophecy starts with the book of Daniel. Listeners may have heard that I think prophecy starts with Genesis. The book of Daniel is a little bit controversial in that you've got the rabbinic version of Daniel, and then you've got the born-again believer version of Daniel. The narratives are quite different, being that the rabbis say, when you ask them, what do you think of Daniel, they say not much. And they say not much because Daniel had visions. Now, the other prophets, major and minor prophets, you get, thus saith the Lord. But in the book of Daniel, you don't get that dimension. And I'm going to have some comments at the end, but I would like Joel to give me his understanding of the book of Daniel. I've researched it. You got two different narratives. I think Joel's got a better grasp for it than me. I'm going to turn it over to you, Joel.
All right. Daniel was a prince. He was of the royal bloodline. And at the River Chabad is where his visions began. And in there, it talks about the great being that he saw that was made up of different elements. And in that element, those elements, they correspond to, they made it to correspond to prophecy. So essentially, that is the book of Daniel, and then, of course, Daniel in the lion's den, and who the third party was, or rather, what made the lions not eat Daniel. So then there is the offshoot of the book of Ruth, which in the Jews were supposed to be all eliminated because they wouldn't bow down to the god of the king. And so that is where, through the Ruth, who saved the Jews from being exterminated. So there you have it.
Stu, I need you to cover for me for the next 3 to 5 minutes, please.
Go ahead, Joe.
Okay. Now, one of my own personal interest in Daniel is the description of this great being that was made up of gold and his different body parts that were made up of different elements,
iron,
in clay.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where you have the people that get into prophecy, that those represent ages. But of course, there's the regular scholarly work that says, no, that's not correct. So what you have is that you have a conflict between the biblical scholars of where out of Daniel is what, and Ezekiel and Isaiah are one of the main books in which the dispensationalists draw their philosophy. And so, for instance, the great being, who was made up of gold, silver, lead, clay, those represented different ages. But to the scholar, they represented different civilizations. And so you have, between traditional scholars who of the Bible who say nonsense that it references to this present time. So that story of the book of Daniel, I don't want to get into the different events because most people have read the book of Daniel. But that's the big controversy within Daniel, Ezekiel, and Isaiah. But it's taking verses in which certain biblical scholars say, no, that's not correct.
Now, what is correct, in your opinion?
I would say what the biblical scholars say because of what dispensationalism is and what it was used for politically. It was used to sway an entire population into supporting the state of Israel and putting it into the here and now, meaning according to international law. They could not have formed Israel in the way that they did. It is totally against international law. You can't do that. And they did, just like they moved the embassy. You can't do that because Jerusalem was supposed to remain an open city, not ruled over by one country. And they did. So that's why I say I don't pay much attention to what the dispensationalists have to say about the book of Daniel.
Okay, fair enough. Now, dispensationalism, describe it for the listeners, if you would, Joe.
Okay, that that is different times of where there would be different events adding up to and culminating into the founding and legitimizing of the state of Israel. That's the sum total of it. And the Christians will be raptured out of here during the great time of tribulation, where the Antichrist will take hold of the world and then go to war against whoever is left here on this planet.
Now, these are the same people that basically come up with the dispensationalism, which are the Christ killers. They kill Christ. That'd be a fair statement to make.
Well, that comes from the time where Jesus was standing before Pilate. Pilate was standing before the mob. The mob was saying, "Give us Barabbas." Pilate said, "This man has done nothing. I want to release him." "No, give us Barabbas. Let his blood be upon us for generation until generation until generation." That's called the seeding. That's why they were at the old churches or the old Christianity. They were called the Christ killers.
Yep. Now, their intent, basically, the devil's intent, I think Rabbi Finkelstein, you remember that interview, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Didn't he say it about right when he said that eventually we're going to get our saucers and we're going to defeat your God?
Well, what he said is that we'll be called the comeback guys. And we will get into our machines and we will go after the old man and we will be called the comeback guys. It's based upon the idea of the great mythical Alpha Centauri, a great war of where Lucifer was taken and his angels were taken down and put into the earth.
Okay, now, in your opinion, straight up, you have a lot of knowledge and wisdom. Years of it. Tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of research. Now, I remember meeting you in, I think it was 94, at a church down there, I believe it was.
Yep.
Where I did a speech. I remember meeting you. Now, Paul had the honor of meeting you recently because of visiting a relative down there, et cetera. And you two had a long chat.
I'm back, you guys.
Okay, now you had a long chat. I'm going to ask Paul, now since he's back, because I know you've been listening, what is your opinion of the knowledge of Joel?
Well, look, when Joel holds court, I listen. listen. And I know we're all human, and we all have the presence of God in us. We were created in His image. And I think Joel is brilliant. I think he's insightful. And what I really like about Joel is he challenges my thinking. And I think I'm going to speak for the listener here. We have been so thoroughly indoctrinated. The institutions across America have been infiltrated. And it's not just the education, the university system, the media, military-industrial complex. It's the seminary schools. And what happened in the seminary schools, of course, is the Rockefeller money, the Carnegie money, the J.P. Morgan. But it wasn't just in America. It goes through Germany. It goes through France. And a lot of it traces back to the Roman Catholic Church, and in particular, one branch that everyone should be aware of, the Jesuits. Now, I've spent thousands of hours reading primary documents from the Jesuits, Bellarmine, Lacunza, Ribera, and Stu, I can send you an 8-hour summary of some of my work, but I think everyone should read it because it's in their own words. And once you read what's in their own words, you'll understand that the Jesuits took over. Well, Protestantism was in protest. Those that protested, they were seen as a threat, and fairly quickly the Roman Catholic Church responded. And Fox's books, Book of Martyrs, or maybe it's more than one book now, I'm not even sure, but the point being is that the Roman Catholic Church has controlled what we believe. And one of the doctrines that they promoted through a guy named Darby and maybe Margaret MacDonald, and there are a bunch of names, but the reality is that guy named Lacunza, he already had this pre-tribulation rapture type of doctrine figured out, futurism. They also are responsible for preterism. Anyway, you asked me a simple question. What do I think of Joel? I think Joel knows a lot about a lot. So rather than me ramble and tell you about all my primary source research, I want to turn back to Joel and just say, hey, Joel, you put in the yards. I'd like you to hold court for a little longer.
Okay. Just remember, I'm a private in this man's army.
I don't think so.
Private, that's it.
I don't think so.
They said it, I didn't. All I did was repeat it. And that's true, that's all I did. So, holding court, jeez. Such flattery. Anyway, somebody did some real good research, and one of the things that they came across was futurism, and what it was is a Lacunza appointed by Ignatius of Loyola was to help the church deal with indulgences. And indulgences are where you can give money and have your sins forgiven and you'll get your place in heaven. So there was a lot of corruption with it, which of course led to the breakaway of Luther breaking away and posting his documents. So to say the church should not be the blame of it, they came up with this. They came up with futurism. Now I can't get into the details of it, but somebody did some beautiful research on it, and they have done beautiful research explaining where the origins of the Jesuits came from. Essentially, it came out of the Jewish community, and it was done because Torquemada and the others were threatening the community, and if you wanted to survive, you had to convert. Except the rabbi, the Kahala, said, go ahead, convert, but at nighttime, keep your religion. And so they did. And so that is where Ignatius of Loyola and three others who were Jews and three other Gentiles founded the Jesuit. And they used Spanish money, and Dutch money to found the movement. And there are certain philosophies and meditations that they use that to where in some political sides, political environments within the Roman, or rather in the Italian community, of where the Jesuits run the Catholic Church and the general runs the Pope. But it filtered its way all the way down to like Mary Ellen White, who founded the Adventists, and it was called the burned out area. It happened in the early 1800s, where people literally got onto their roof and said, we're going to be raptured out of here, and it didn't happen. And the Jehovah Witnesses came out of that because they said the same thing. And these people then came forward and founded their own denominations. But dispensationalism was actually perfected for a modern political thing with Samuel Untermyer and
Schofield.
So Schofield was actually not a man of letters. He was an alcoholic and a criminal. And so what he did was that he connected up. How it was connected up, I don't know. But by that time, the Jewish community owned Oxford Press. They took the King James Version of the Bible, or the Geneva Bible, and took out of it certain verses and put in their verses, which would eventually lead as a means to substantiate or fulfill so-called biblical prophecy for the founding of Israel.
Okay, now, go ahead, Joe.
So, in other words, Israel is a Rothschild field. I call it Fort Israel because it's at the crossroads of where 75% of the Earth's mineral wealth is held in the Middle East. And so that's why I say the One Belt Road system that is being developed now is going to be the future thing, and you are going to see that what I call the disenfranchisement of Western civilization, where you will have, using the weapon of population shifts created by them, to where you have thousands upon thousands upon thousands of Africans, Middle Easterners, going into Europe and taking away that cultural society. The same thing for the United States, except it comes up through the southern border, of where this last month, 70,000 came through. 70,000. And it will make the United States into what they call a browning and a disenfranchisement of the white European culture. And the white European culture is the last to stand against this world-dominated governance by the globalists. And that sums it up as short as I can do it.
Now, you got any comments, Paul?
Well, yes. Thank you, Joel, because you hit the punchline. And Western civilization, as we know it, has been under attack, really, well, I would argue, for a couple of hundred years. Most people don't know the history of Germany. And I'm not going to go into the history of Germany because I want to stay focused, but what people need to know is that Germany needed to be unified, because Germany was much like the United States. It was just one more example, precursor of their movement towards one world religion. And until Germany was unified, then they couldn't move forward with the unification of Europe. And, of course, we know the unification of Europe, the euro. Originally, it was going to be 10 countries, and then it ends up being a lot more countries. And so
I'm going to have to, I have to silence myself for a minute. I'm sorry, you guys. I'll be back in a minute. I can listen though.
Go ahead, Joe. You want to comment what he was talking about?
I think a good word to use is globalist. People like the Rothschild, the Coons, the Loebs, major banking families, Paul Singer. These are the men that manipulate the world economy. And he who controls the economy controls the world, as Ansel Rothschild said.
Well, we can go to, as an example, we can go to, as an example, and look at the General Accounting Office, the watchdog of the U.S. Congress, that has the power to carry a gun and badge, but they get their information from the Treasury Department, Comptroller of Currency, IRS, etc., and they report the economy to the Congress and Senate, and they do this, I believe, a couple times a year. In 1981, the General Accounting Office said that 1% of the population controlled 20% of the U.S. economy. That was the New World Order, boys. That means 99% of us controlled 80% of our own economy. Small businesses, larger businesses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mom-pop type operations. That was in 81 when Daddy Bush arrives as Vice President of the United States from his stolen election called October Surprise, paying the Iranians to keep the hostages. Now, in 2012, the General Accounting Office comes out with a report which is fascinating to see. It said that the economy, that 95% now of the U.S. economy was controlled by 400 men. 95% of the economy was controlled by 400 men. I looked at the pension funds and said, oh my God. Okay, J.P. Morgan was controlling about 44% of the pension funds. And Fidelity Financial in Denver, which is a two APEC director, or the APEC director in particular, Norman Brownstein, one of the 60-eyed counsel to Daddy Bush, I've talked about him many, many times, him and Larry Mizell were the two attorneys, come out of border together. One goes to work for Milma as a builder, MDC Holdings, Richmond American Homes, building apartments, etc., and the other one became an attorney for Milman, Leonard Milman, my ex-wife's father, one of the Illuminati 12, the Jewish mob in America, period. Mizell took over for him, but I understood from Super Spook Otis Johnson that he was inhabited by a fallen angel, Milman was, and it jumped in Larry Mizell. They anoint each other. Now, Mizell turns around with Great West Life Insurance Company of Denver, which was a subsidiary of Power Financial, Meyer Lansky. Milman took it over. Then he created Great West Life. They were the parent company that busted out Imperial Savings. They busted out Western Savings. They busted out a whole bunch of S&Ls using this. Now there's Fetzer. I'm going to bring him into the call, and we'll let him run his report. Hang on, gentlemen. I hope I can get him in. I'm going to have to call him back. But let me put this out. That Great West Life Insurance bought from J.P. Morgan. They bought their pension funds. They're in Overland Park, a subsidiary of Great West Life bought J.P. Morgan's block of the pension funds, which they operate their home base now out of Overland Park, Kansas.
There's Waddell and Reed, and there's a bunch of other things. Let's just pause this right now because the transfer of wealth is bigger than we can handle right now. Let's call Jim Fetzer, get him on, and we'll pick up where we left off.
Okay, hold on, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Jim, you ready to go?
Yeah.
Okay, hang on. Yep, we got a show.
Can you give me just a minute or two to set up here? I'm sorry, I had the phone off the hook.
Yeah, 2707. You want me to call you back on this one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Give me five.
Okay.
Give me five.
Okay.
Thanks.
You gentlemen there? Joel?
Yeah.
Okay, we're still going. I talked with Fetzer, he said about 5 minutes. We'll make it a separate show. Why don't we complete this show?
All right, Stu, where you're at right now is you're talking about a massive transfer of wealth. We are now at the 1% of the 1% control everything, and we've reached insanity, idiocracy, kleptocracy. And so what you've got is this massive transfer of wealth so very few control everything. These people lack compassion. They lack conscience. And we have this phony economy. It's all smoke and mirrors. It's sorcery. It's black magic. And so we need to fast forward today, because now they're just going to print money until the final collapse. And the final collapse is very far off. So that's where I think we've got to end this and then call Jim back. And then we can pick this up. But I think everyone has to understand that this stock market's phony. The money is phony. Fiat currency is phony. And we can take that to a different level too, but I just want to, everyone needs to understand that this is all about their new world order, total control, slavery of us all, and their big punchline is H+, and we can't go there right now because we got to live in the present, and not that H+ isn't the present, but Jim's going to have some intelligence for us, and then we can dissect that later.
Okay, now real quick, I want to add to this before we end the show. I don't know whether anybody's seen it or not, but the ATM machines in different parts of this city, Kansas City, are not working. They're not working. People are going to the ATM machine, and they're you know, it's not working. It's not working. They're all over. Quick Trips, every place. Why is that? And it's just not me saying it. Other people are trying to use their card, and they can't use their card, but then go up there and purchase instead of getting money out of the bank. What's going on? We'll leave them holding with that question. You have anything to add to it, Joe or Paul, before we end this program?
No.
Okay.
Well said. Thank you.
Okay, I'll call you both back shortly. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.